There's a thousand further women living out there. They're all living, the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katsalomitis. I write the Cats Report on LasVegasSun.com, LasVegasWeekly.com. Dishy.
I'm Dish, Trisha McCrone, and I'm really just excited about the show right now, and so is Brooke.
Down, Brooke.
Brooke, my little dog, Brookie, my little 2-pounder's back again, co-hosting. She enjoyed it so much last time.
2 pounds of fun.
Exactly. So we have a great show today, and I have to say, I think it's the it's the hottie guy show, though. I mean, I'm personally very excited about this show because we have the incredibly talented, handsome, handsome Josh Strickland from Holly's World and Peep Show.
Do you think he's handsome, though?
Yeah, he's not bad looking. And then we also have the equally hilariously handsome Hal Sparks.
Right, Hal Sparks. We've had a stretch of guests who you've found attractive, I've noticed, on our show.
Yes.
Consecutively.
Yeah, imagine, and I think I've done all those bookings.
I know. I'm beginning to think that I've noticed the sameness in your approach. We haven't had anybody terribly appealing to Johnny for a while.
I know, that's true. We haven't. But besides Holly and Alicia, I think
Holly
that's,
and Alicia.
All right, well, you know,
who don't get cheated. I mean, you know.
Yeah, which, by the way, they make up for a lot. They're both
gorgeous.
They
do, yeah.
So, well, I think you need to start booking some hotties. I won't veto them.
Okay. You want to be on the show? Oh, I'm kidding.
Oh, I'm on every week, but I'm So,
what's happening, Dishy?
I had a great weekend.
You have a great weekend every weekend.
I know, but Friday night, went out with our gang. Our group of friends.
Troop of buffoons.
Or the cool kids, sometimes we like to refer them. To Firefly, and I ran into... Speaking of Hal Sparks,
he was at Firefly.
Yes, he was at Firefly after his show at the Shimmer Cabaret. So that was fun. And then Saturday night, I'm sorry that you missed it, but was another amazing Vegas Magazine party, which I had a great time at. Abby, Tegnalia, everybody, they were all just, it was a great crowd. Saw a lot of, like Mercedes from Mark and Mercedes, and obviously Alicia Jacobs, Dory with her Dory shoes. Well, she didn't have the Dory shoes.
Dora Mar Bonilla of Sin City Comedy.
Yeah, Jason Feinberg. It was a lot of great people. It was fun.
Jason, our friend from Channel 5. Yeah, that was a high caliber group. And I am sorry I missed it. I had family in town this weekend.
I know you had your dad in town, but you did some fun things.
Dr. George Katsalomitis, veterinarian, retired veterinarian, was down with his wife, Betty, from Pocatello, Idaho.
I love Betty.
Pocatello, Idaho. And we went to see Human Nature. Our last week's guest.
Had they seen them before?
They had not. No. And long story short, Dad and I got up and danced.
Did you stop in the name of love?
Stop. In the name of love, that one.
Insert choreography.
Yeah, and Andrew from the stage saw me out there dancing to it, and he pointed at me and started laughing. And
well, is that a good sign, Kat?
I think so.
Okay.
Why not?
Okay.
You know, it's better to be pointed at and laughed at than not be pointed at all, as somebody wiser than I once said. And we also saw went to see a baseball game. We saw some Big League weekend. We saw the Reds and the Cubs play out at Cashman Field.
Caught up
with the mayor. Said hello to the mayor. She threw out the first pitch.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and so that was kind of like it was a family weekend in a lot of ways, but with a lot of Vegas in there. But I am sorry that I couldn't make it over to Vegas Magazine's party. And
it was
also Don Chirunzi's birthday, who's Robin Leach's editor.
You know, I just saw that. Actually, after the party ended, so I feel terrible. I owe him
a phone call.
Yeah, I definitely owe him a phone call.
Yeah, he's one of the great journalists in Las Vegas,
and
Don.
A great guy.
Super guy, great friend of mine.
And as a matter of fact, Tropicana, speaking of family night, my family and I had dinner with our dear family friends, Alex and Arta Yamanijian, who are the owners of the Tropicana here in Las Vegas.
They're changing everything.
They are. And, you know, it was a great dinner at Biscayne. Oh, the food was delicious. Mm-hmm. It was great.
And they're announcing, I covered this week, Gladys Knight is coming into the showroom.
Yeah.
They've renamed Tiffany Theater the Gladys Knight Theater.
Yeah.
And she was down there. Yeah. And so you got some old Vegas going in with the South Beach theme.
Yeah.
Over
it's
there.
Nice. And, you know, and it was a great, and also, but it, more lovely was the company because Alex and Art are just.
He's
just
an elegant man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ours, I like to call him Omar Sharif.
Sharif.
He's another handsome man.
Sharif-esque.
Yes.
Yeah, he's definitely, they call him, I think his nickname was the Wizard when he was at MGM.
And his
Alex
wife
Wizard.
Is a stunning, gorgeous artist. She's one of the nicest, just one of the nicest families I've ever had the pleasure of being, you know,
well,
being
as you know,
with.
I'm a big fan of what they're doing down there at the Trop, if for no other reason than they're investing in the property, because mm-hmm. I covered since our last show, I covered the closing, announced closing of Sahara, that they're
yes,
going to be closing
right.
that hotel
yeah.
on May 16th. And there's nothing more distressing than to see a hotel in the wake of an announcement that 1,000 people are going to be without jobs in a couple of months. So I was distressed to have to write about that place. Is you know, it's been yeah. a big part of Las Vegas history since 1952. And
it's sad to see another one go.
Yeah,
you know?
It's one of the few ones that has actually, very few have closed for reasons other than they were improving the property. You know, we've had a lot of places close, imploded, something else bigger planned. Sahara's just closing. And it's a brand, it's a trademark of Las Vegas. So, I just hope this period of time ends. You know?
Yeah, it's and hopefully, I don't know if someone's going to take it over, they're going to implode. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's always sad to see one.
Yeah,
go.
Sam Nazarian, who heads up the ownership team down there at Sahara, they're saying they're going to bring in something on that property that's going to be different.
So it's going to be imploded.
Something will
likely,
be there, yeah.
yeah.
Keep your eye out in between 1 and 2 years. There'll
for
be something
news.
Down there, yes.
But Brookie just woke up.
Down Brookie.
And gave you a look. She just woke up and gave you a look.
Time to bring Josh in.
Yeah, because she got all excited, as do I, that coming up next is from star of Holly's World and Peep Show, Josh Strickland. I just cannot get that song out of my head. I keep singing it and singing it. It is the best song ever.
So far,
is, of course, Report to the Floor by our guest today, Josh Strickland. He is the star of Holly's World and Peep Show, and he was Tarzan on Broadway. I mean, he's so sick and so gorgeous. It's literally crazy.
He's under the weather. I didn't know that. You're not feeling well today, Josh?
Oh, I'm feeling awesome today.
That's the other sick.
He's
I guess
always yeah. awesome when he's with Dish.
Dish right? is probably wishing that Josh came in with his Tarzan costume.
Ooh,
and the whole loincloth thing. But
Disney wouldn't let me take that one home.
Oh,
so.
They wouldn't?
No.
Those people are so possessive, aren't they?
They are, but you know what? They are such a great thing for me. I mean, they gave me a chance, basically an unknown, and I think that's what's most important about being an artist, and is somebody giving you the chance to be able to do your craft, and that's kind of where it all kind of started.
You know, I was looking through, you know, first, I have to say, Josh, yes, is one of my great friends, and I love him more than anything, but before we became friends, when Peep Show first opened.
Right.
I was like, this is the most talented guy, and it comes from the heart.
Oh,
you know, like, I mean, it's like he doesn't phone it in. So many people have talent, but they don't have the heart. Josh is so talented. It's literally sickening how
yeah.
talented he is.
We saw that show together, didn't we? We
Probably.
Saw the opening
oh,
of
the
Peep
very
Show,
first,
the very
yeah.
first, and
yeah.
I remember talking about it even then when the yeah. original cast was
right,
in play.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And as we say, mm-hmm. no, and don't remember, we
Thanks.
Love Holly. We think Holly's amazing, but you are the true star of Peep Show.
I
mean,
oh,
if you
really
look at
you.
Who puts in, the, you know, who's on stage the most, who works the most,
Thank
and
you.
You, I mean, if you haven't seen Peep Show, you have to go see it
Get
just for Josh
it.
Alone.
It's wonderful because I think that it's evolved so much because from the very first time, it was Mel B and Kelly Monaco.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it was kind of based upon like a 3 month here, every so often the stars would be, you know, rotated.
Right.
Peep Diva and Bo Peep Roll anyways. And so then, you know, names were being tossed around and Holly's name was coming up and we saw her in the audience a couple times and... You know, it's just like, it's kind of cool how it all happened. And
yeah.
now she's stayed for over a year now.
And she's fantastic in it.
And she's great. And she brings the people. I think she brings the correct clientele
yeah.
that we've kind of been searching for. And
people
kind of
who scream a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the thing is that even though it's like a topless review, it's more women than men come to see our show.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of crazy because especially with the reality show, Holly's World, you know, all the fans that have seen us on TV, it's like the only show on TV you can actually go and buy a ticket to.
Well, it's so funny. It's crazy. One night, Josh and I were having, something to eat or having a drink or something after the show. And it was like just him walking through Planet Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the Beatles were walking in. I mean, they're
oh,
all like,
please.
It's Josh. And all of a sudden, people are throwing cameras at me to take pictures. I felt like I had to do security. It was crazy. But yeah, I mean, you're in everybody's homes. It's
great because, you know, season one was really great and we had a great time. But then season two, you know, it's airing right now and it's just gotten so much.
It's kicked it up a notch.
It's kicked it up a notch. And I think that, you know, a lot of the stuff, I think a lot of misconception about reality shows and things on TV are that you know, it is real. We are seriously friends. We are doing things that we would normally do. We just have cameras on us, you know. And of course, there's, you know, stories that we're trying to arc here, sure, because we can't just, you know, be real world, or it would be real, mm-hmm, world, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, we do have storylines, but it's storylines that we've talked to our producers about. We've chatted about things that are going on in our lives.
You've gotten really personal this season, yeah, as far, yeah, as with seeing a therapist and, mm-hmm, and the search for your birth parents. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole therapy thing, I had a misconception about it, because, you know, you think, oh God, you obviously have a problem or something, and I don't want to, want to go to therapy. But, you know, it's, I think it's one of the best things for somebody, just to go and talk to somebody that doesn't know you, that doesn't know your life, that you can just bleed yourself to, you know.
Yes.
And it's really nice to just have her to talk to, and have her to talk about what's going on in my mind and my brain, and you know, because I'm sitting at home by myself most of the time, you know. After Peep Show, it's only 2 hours a night, so I have all day long to sit around and do whatever I want.
If I was Josh, I would look in the mirror a lot.
Yeah, you ever think I'm alone with a madman?
Right. I mean, but, you know, you're alone with your own mind, so, mm-hmm, I think it's really, really kind of, it's therapeutic in a way, just to go and just to talk. And I'm glad that I'm able to show that on the show, because I think that America and a lot of kids too need to know and understand that it's okay,
yes,
to go and talk. Everybody has an issue. Everybody has a problem. And,
yep,
it doesn't mean you're crazy. It doesn't mean you're nuts. It just means that you're in tune, mm-hmm, with who you are, and you need to go and just talk about it.
Yeah, learning how to, yeah, communicate at that,
absolutely,
level is important, especially for young people.
Absolutely.
You know, internalizing your emotions is not healthy.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what, you know, and it's, I'm such an advocate for, like, you know, the gay teen youth,
yes,
and stuff, because so many things
that's
been
going
on,
yeah,
you know, with a lot of the, you know, just people killing themselves, and it's just
the bullying,
the
and
bullying,
everything.
Mm-hmm. Everything. Because I was bullied in school. You know, obviously we've all, sometimes we've all been there, but it's really, really, for some reason, just heightened at this year and in the past couple years. And I just think that it's really important to have people to know that there is somebody there to talk to, and that there, okay, is a hotline. There is places that you can go and chat about what you're going through and your emotions and how it feels. You know?
And even as in all your success and everything, that it kind of shows them that it doesn't matter where you are in life, everybody needs it.
Has it, you, mm-hmm, know. And so it's been great. And the whole birth mom thing, that's what's helped me with that. You know, it kind of segued into the search and to try and figure it out, because I've always grown up knowing I was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always that thing with my mom that she said, well, it was a closed adoption. I'm not really sure how far you can get, because basically in 1983, closed adoption just means you don't get
you
any
don't
information.
Get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, times have changed and documents have opened and rules have changed. And so we hired these private investigators, and it's kind of what's happening. Right. It's kind of great how our show is so current right now, because,
yeah,
that really just happened.
Yeah. Remember, you just recently went
just
back home.
Went back,
yeah,
home. So, I mean, it was wonderful, because we hired a private investigator. We got down deep. We got, they did it old school way. They,
yeah,
went and they looked and they found people, and they knew, because I was born and raised in the same town, Charleston. So, I mean, mm-hmm, like, there were people still there. And so they did that work. And, you know, the episode coming up this week is they tell me that they found her. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's been a very emotional roller coaster,
yeah,
I have to say.
I know we've talked about it before. And what I think is so incredible is the relationship that you have with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, we've talked about this, how they were so supportive of you doing this, that it wasn't so much that you were trying to replace them in,
right,
any way, but you just wanted to know a little bit about where you came from.
And I think that a lot of adopted people can relate, because it's one of those things that you don't know the information. You don't know what you look like. You don't know where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know your background. You don't know why they gave you up. You don't know the situation. And so it's really nice to be able to get the puzzle pieces together, you,
yes,
know? And so I owe it all to Holly's World and to Holly, because, you know, I mean, it really wouldn't have happened, I don't think, without their help.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you would have done this absent the show.
You know, I don't, that's a question I keep asking myself. I'm not sure if I would have. I think that it was always something I wanted to do, but it just, I think I would have shoved it away, you know, and it was just one of those things that this going to therapy and talking to everybody, and it just kind of catapulted into doing it.
And what effect did having the cameras on you have to the process? Was it, ooh, more painful, do you think, or less painful? I mean, that's,
you know,
obviously,
I think that obviously there was a lot of anger for me anyways, because it was kind of like I wasn't told what was going on and what had been found out and everything.
Oh,
so it was,
gosh,
kind of like I felt like I was being played with my emotions a little bit, but it is an emotional thing. So I don't blame anybody. Yes. I just wish that maybe it had been a little bit of a different way. I don't mind the cameras on because I don't really notice that they're there. I'm always going to be me. You know, I'm not trying to heighten just
that's
because
why the cameras are there.
I know. So it's like, you know, I'm not putting on a show, but it really, I think that it did make me a little bit more emotional about it because it was so much information all at once and kind of in like 2 days, you know, I mean, it wasn't over a span of a week or anything like that. It was literally, we went there, we had it and we did it. And
I remember before you left, you didn't even know if they were found yet or not.
Oh,
I mean, when you, cause we were out just before you left and you said, I know that I'm going there and I'm meeting these people, but I don't know if they found them. So,
and that's the thing is that I went there not knowing anything.
Yeah.
I went there knowing that the private investigators were down there.
Mm-hmm. They're based in Charleston.
No, they were actually they're in Detroit, so they actually flew down.
Did you decide on that, or did the producers decide
on who? Well, they knew people in the industry, and they had worked with people like this before.
They must have known that they would be able to figure
this
out pretty quickly.
And that's the thing. I mean, most everybody was like, "Oh, you know, they're going to find them," and I was like, "But I don't know," because even my mom was like, "It was a closed adoption," and we actually went to the lawyers and asked, what if we tried to get this information? They're like, well, you really can't because the documents are sealed unless she gives the, you know, okay to open them back up or talk about it. And so it's going to be it's over a 2-episode span. So this first one is me going to Charleston and them telling me that they found her. And it's like, it's a lot of emotions. And I think that a lot of people are going to really, you know, I think even if you're adopted or not, really get in tune with like family and with like backgrounds and stuff. It really made me appreciate my life and my family a lot more.
And your parents have given you a great life.
Absolutely.
I mean, all the things that you've done and you've accomplished. I mean, you've had it must also have been nice to be able to take it to your birth parents that, you know what, thank you for doing what you did because my parents gave me such a great life that I've been able to have,
you know.
And it was because of her making that decision that you've had a great life.
And I think that's one of the most learning that was the biggest decision anybody can ever make is to have that thought process to give up a child and to let them have a better life because you know that you can't give them that. You know, so I think that took a lot of courage and a lot of emotions because, you know, long conversations, but you'll just have to watch on TV, I guess. But, you know,
we will.
Maybe we'll do a part 2 of this and I'll tell
you all
the juicy details.
Okay, done deal.
But yeah, it was a lot, but...
So now let's talk. I'm going to switch gears a little bit to Report to the Floor.
Yeah.
Oh, top 10 hit on iTunes dance charts. I mean, it is just huge. It's so funny. I keep singing it in my head, and everywhere I go, I'm singing. And people are like, I know I can't get that song out of my head.
It's cool. I mean, like, the thing is that it's so wonderful to see, like, Twitter, you know, the power of Twitter and TV and stuff. It's kind of neat to have the responses that everybody's having. You know, I don't think that people expected anything like that to come out of, it all happened through the TV show because I met Damon, my producer, who did the track, An Accident, who is the beat maker. All through Holly's World because he wrote the Holly's World theme.
Okay.
So that's how it kind of started first season. And then, you know, behind the scenes, he was calling, we were chit-chatting, and like he really wanted to do something. And so we got into the studio and just kind of let him have it, you know?
Did you go in the studio with the song in mind? I mean, did you write the song or was it given to you? How does that process work?
It was a collective kind of process. I mean, like, all the ad-libbing and stuff, obviously, it's just me doing it. But, you know, the beats and everything Accident had, Damon is such an amazing. He's a Grammy Award winner. He's Dionne Warwick's son. You know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
wow.
And so he won a Grammy for the Lady Marmalade with Christina Aguilera, Little Kim, and all that. So he's a music genius. So he like set. We sat in the studio, and he just comes up with, you know, the kind of the line and kind of, you know, what the groove is, and then he added all his stuff later, and we're really excited about it, and I'm glad that it's just the first song. Like, I can't wait for everybody else to hear
the other songs. Are amazing.
I've
heard your other songs. Yeah. I mean, when I tell you the songs, I mean, Report to the Floor is amazing. As great as it is, the others are even
I think so
fabulous.
Too. Yeah. I mean, like, we have one I think that we're going to release for the summertime, and it's really, you know, it's really sexy. It's neat. I like the beats that have gone, that we're going for. I'm not trying to be the next Justin Timberlake, you know, that's not what I'm going for. I'm not trying to be the next pop prince, but I want to at least make some good stuff that people want to listen to and that can jive and work out to and play in the clubs, because that's what's hot right now. You know, look at Britney's new song. It's a dance track. J-Lo's new song is a dance track. Like, Kim Kardashian's song is a dance track.
Okay, I'm just going to leave. I'm not going to put Kim Kardashian and you in the same category, honey.
You don't want to be the next.
She's above me on the charts.
Well, I'm just going to say talent-wise.
The power of followers.
Yeah, I said it right here on Cats of the Dish. There's no way you can even put them in the same sentence,
well,
talent-wise.
But it's neat to see what's happened and what's gone with it. So.
Yeah, this underscores another point I was going to make earlier, too, about being in Peep Show. I mean, you're genuinely a Broadway-caliber vocalist and stage performer, right? Mm-hmm. And you're in a show that draws a lot of people who might not appreciate that the level of aptitude you bring to the show. What do you think? I mean, do you have to accept that? And is it hard to improve on what you've been given already in that atmosphere?
I never really knew what to expect coming to Vegas because I've never been to Vegas and performed in Vegas. So Broadway is a totally different thing. Yeah. You know, our show is obviously family oriented. It was a Disney show.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Tarzan, you mean?
Tarzan,
not
Peep
Show.
No, not Peep Show. No.
Depends on the family.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's kind of interesting to see. Like, that's what I did think. I thought, oh, gosh, well, I'm coming here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sing these songs, and nobody's really going to give a crap. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, as time progressed, I think people, you know, the name Peep Show, you don't know really what to expect. It's a poster of pretty ladies on the front.
It's not like Tarzan where you
exactly.
know exactly what it is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So people come here, and they are blown away at the caliber of voices and that are on that stage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even the other two women singers
and
our
all
Peep
live
Diva,
vocals, which
all
is very, you know, isn't always the case in Vegas.
Exactly.
It's all live vocals.
So, I mean, like, I think that people walk away, and that's what I love hearing, because people walk away with, like, wow, like, I am genuinely impressed. I had no idea that that's what the show is. And that's kind of a sad thing to hear, too, because it's kind of like, well, then we could market a whole
other
way.
Their expectations are different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad it's a positive thing,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
and instead of walking away like, whoa, what did I just say?
Well, how did that come about? There you are. You're on Broadway. You are just...
Well, Tarzan closed, and then there was a long span, obviously... After doing something like Tarzan, I was so blessed to have it as my first gig. You know, it's a lead title original
and you're,
role.
And all of a sudden you're on the Today Show the next day
with
Phil
Collins
singing a duet.
Yeah,
I mean, not bad for a young kid.
My world was turned upside down at that point.
Uh-huh. How old were you then when that happened?
I was 22.
Right.
Wow.
On.
So, and most people are, and I have respect for this, I got it so early and I was so blessed to have that. And people are still in their 40s and 50s still trying to get that lead title character original role. And so I am just so blessed that I got to do it. But it's hard to get a job after that because
you're
already at that caliber or you're put in that grouping. And so then only people will, I can't go in for ensemble. They won't let me, you know, so it's kind of weird because these parts don't come up all the time. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, you know, it was hard to find a job. Then just kind of singing different places randomly. And then Peep Show came up, and it was just a show, Jerry Mitchell, and I knew of him because he was a Broadway guy.
Yeah, did that Legally
Blonde and Hairspray. Mm-hmm.
Hairspray
and,
out here, right?
He's incredible. And he did this thing that originated in New York called Broadway Bears.
Uh-huh.
And a whole bunch of people, it raises money for AIDS, and it's incredible because it's a whole community that gets together, dancers, singers, everybody in Broadway, and it's a strip show.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, they raise money and everybody comes. It's always sold out. They have two shows, and it's awesome. And he took that and made it into a Vegas burlesque show.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is so wonderful because the vision you can totally see in this production, the three runways that we have and the way that there is one woman in each number that strips, because that was how Broadway Bears was centered. It was each person, there was a lead strip. And so that's kind of, you know, where it evolved from. And it's just, you know, I went in and they were looking for a male vocalist. And
so did you audition or did Jerry
say,
oh, wow.
But it was a one-on-one thing with Jerry. Yeah. He knew me. He knew my voice. But I don't think that they had only heard me sing the Tarzan stuff, you know, and so it was completely different. And I don't think they'd heard me sing, you know, R&B or any kind of like Aerosmith rock stuff, because I wasn't screaming at the top of my lungs in Tarzan. I was singing Phil Collins music. So, I mean, it's high stuff, but, you know, you're not like, you know. So, I mean, it was kind of cool for me to go in and show them that I can sing a couple different ways, you know. And it's kind of neat that, you know, I'm Horny, Let's Do It, you know, Pony.
Yeah. It's a great number.
Expect it coming out of this white boy, you know.
Yeah,
so,
well,
I mean,
what's so funny
neat.
is that us ladies in the show that go see the show, people are like, oh, yeah, the whole saddle thing and that number. I'm like, who's looking at the saddle? I'm looking at Josh. I'm like,
in my tight leather pants.
I know Josh is working it back there. I mean, I know there's something else going on with the girls stripping, but ladies, when you go see the show, make sure in that number you watch Josh in those leather pants with that crop. It's
crop.
Pretty hot. It's pretty
the
hot.
I think what's kind of cool too is that it does bring men to the show, but the men are loving the male guys. Like, it's kind of neat because it's kind of like, wow, like, this guy's singing up on, like, cool, you know? I mean, I think that it's not just for the guys, you know? The women love it, but the guys are walking away with kind of being blown away that they actually are listening and liking the guy, you know?
Yeah, and you know, the fact that you just mentioned that, and it's so funny that it was actually mentioned on a recent Peep show. It was actually Damon that said that. When you hang out with Josh, he just does breakout to song instead of speaking sometimes. Right. And they did a thing on Holly's World where he was saying that if you're at McDonald's that you would sing your order, which is that we one night played a little bit of blackjack together, and it was like hit me, turned out to be, by the end of the night, the dealers were like practically giving him money to sing. It was
hilarious.
Performance, like a street performer at the casino.
It really is. I mean, it's fun. That's me. That's my personality.
But I love it because his voice is so amazing. Every time he says something that he sings it, I'm like, this is, I mean, just hang out with Josh. Not only do you get to look at somebody, but you get gorgeous, and he's a great friend, but you get entertained by his singing at all times.
I got to do this. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. Joining us for this segment is Josh Strickland of Peep Show in Holly's World. You mentioned Broadway Bears. Mm-hmm. It's coming up here in Las Vegas.
It is,
pretty soon, right?
A couple weeks. Jerry is going, he started and originated in New York, and now he's going to do one in London, and he's going to have one here.
You did one, there was one last year.
Last year was the first one.
It was the first year, but this year Jerry wants to get his hands on it and make it a huge, huge thing, because it's gigantic in New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, it's on its 20 some, you know, it's huge. It's been going on for years and years and years.
There was a good turnout last year just from word of mouth.
It was, and we were very, very happy with that. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't know if 5 people were going to come or not, you know. So it was just cool to get, you know, and there's also, I think, the Golden Rainbow that's kind of along the same lines that has originated in Las Vegas. But there's just something about it being in our Peep Show Theater that it really originated, because I'm sure, you know, that's been around for a while, but Jerry really started this in Splash Bar in New York City, you know, just with a few of his friends raising awareness and raising money for AIDS. And it's just been, you know, a great thing. And I'm just happy to be a part of a show that can do that.
So now, how is it different, the Broadway audiences to the Vegas? I mean, obviously, even more adult audience.
Oh,
in
my.
Show, but...
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, you get the drunks, you know, we serve alcohol in the show. So, you know, I think that's kind of fun because they get loud and they get excited. And I wish that we had a pamphlet for etiquette, though, during, like, shows.
What would that pamphlet say? What would it direct us to
man,
do?
There's just, because, you know, back in the day, everybody dressed up to go somewhere.
Yes, this is a pet peeve of
right?
mine in
Vegas.
Right?
And you walk into somewhere and you see people and they're in flip-flops and short booty shorts with their still yard around their neck. You know, it's like, come on.
I know.
You know, but I mean, like.
And by the way, what a yard is are the people that get the gigantic bottles that there's
the
no way you could look cool
of.
In.
Oh,
and they drink
gosh.
Out of it here in Vegas, and it is a yard tall and it's the most ridiculous looking thing.
Oh yeah, it's like frozen drinks. They have margaritas, pictures of margaritas with people walking around. I mean, it's nuts. But to each their own, you know, people are their own people.
That is my pet peeve, though. If you're going to a show at night, you need to dress up. I've never once come to your show in
and
jeans.
Nuts.
I've always had a dress or had something. I don't go to any show.
Me too.
In jeans.
I just
I'm
think it makes you feel it's a night out, you know, and it's supposed to be
it's
fun
Vegas.
For you. It's Vegas. And it's, you know, think about the Rat Pack and all of them in their tuxedos and everything. They'd never left the house without looking like top 10.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's, you know, that's a big thing. But, you know, with our show, we have a lot of young audience members. It's like, you know, young 20-ish people. And I love it because Holly's World has really just packed them in and they are screaming, and I can't tell you how great it feels like when she enters, you know, they're screaming for her, and then now since I'm on the show as well, it's great to get that applause and that type of stuff. And I think that is a little different than Broadway. Not too many people roar, you know, at a show when they're on Broadway. They're just kind of watching and respectful.
It's kind of like a sporting event audience
in
a lot of ways. Yeah.
It is, because they're just like mesmerized by just sitting there and watching, and you know. But I mean, like, as a performer, we like to get that feedback back, because then you know if you're doing something right, if a joke's landing correctly, or, you know, that's how people change shows and keep them going and working on them, because the audiences are really what, you know, drives what we do, because that's, I mean, when I sit and watch something, if it's funny, I'm going to laugh. If it's, if I love it, I'm going to clap and stand up at the end. So,
yeah,
that's true.
Know. Holly's taken voice lessons, or has taken voice
she
lessons.
Has.
What's going on with that? And how is she doing,
Josh?
I have
to tell you, I am very surprised.
How so?
In a good way. Oh, like, in a way that I don't think she knew she had a voice in there. She always said, oh, I'm tone deaf, like, whatever. Obviously, when somebody goes and starts, they're going to be a little rough. I wasn't there for the first couple lessons, but I did talk, you know, to her teacher, and she was like, she was she's not there, you know. Obviously, it took some time, yeah. But she's doing scales, and it's going to show a little bit on the show. And
so she said that someday she'd like to try to do a singing number in Peep Show. Do you think that that's going to?
I think that's possible.
Wow,
I do. I mean, I think the thing with me is that I think that once somebody puts their mind to it and works really hard, I think that anything is possible. Yeah. And I really do. I'm very proud of her because she puts her mind to it. And she sounds really good, and it's cute. You know, it's like a Marilyn Monroe type thing. You know, I mean, like, was she the best singer ever? No. But could she carry a tune and make it sexy and cute? Yes, she could. And I think that...
And she's on Report to the Floor, even.
Absolutely. She's the sexy voice. So it's kind of neat.
Well, that's you, Josh. She's the other sexy.
Right. Thank you. Thank you.
So now, you're the only... Are you one of the only originals left in Peep Show?
There's like three of us left. There's not too many. So wow. Chaza, who is the Peep Diva now... Mm-hmm. She was one of the backup singers originally. And then Casey, who is our Milk Tank girl, she was in the original cast as well. And now
but she wasn't the original Milk Tank girl. There was a girl with the really tight little curls.
Yes. Mariela's, who actually was...
She was terrific.
In Dance With Me, the Frank Sinatra over
at... Oh, okay. Is that where she ended up?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny how the whole cast has evolved. And I think that we... have such a great group now. You know, I mean, not that it was bad before, but there was a lot of things because it changed from pasties to topless. People didn't like it. People were...
You had to weather the Abrio Day storm,
goodness.
Too.
Wow.
Congratulations on
Thank
that.
Thank you very much.
Exactly.
That we all had to ride that wave for a while.
3 months felt like it was a year.
I've never known anybody, Josh, who's made more news in a short period of time than Abrio Day did when she was
I think it's funny because she's always like, the haters. I mean, she thrives on that.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
she was stoking the fire the whole time.
Yeah, she didn't even show up for her own... Opening night
party. Opening night, she fails the show.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
She didn't endear herself to the town very well. And she probably will never be a guest on this show.
And she's no longer in Vegas anymore.
There you go.
There you have it.
That's true.
Yeah, knock on four mic about that.
So what's your favorite number? What's your favorite number to do in Peep Show?
I think my favorite number would have to be the pumpkin number. Like with all the polls that come in.
What's your favorite?
Feeling good. Feeling good. Oh my gosh. He sings it on...
Thank you. I think that what's my favorite about it was that it's just such a beautiful number. You know, I mean, like, it is really sexy. It's not, that's the thing about our show. It's not a strip show.
Yeah,
okay,
no, it's
a very burlesque, old school burlesque. You know, they take off a glove, they take off a piece of clothing. It's very sensual and very beautifully done. And that's what I think Jerry had right. You know, I mean, he knows how to make it very classy. It's a beautiful show. And I think that's another thing that surprises people because it's called Peep Show. You know, you think about Peep Show, you think about, like, you know, the red light district with people in their windows.
People put in a quarter.
Exactly.
Going on, things
exactly. So, I mean, like, I think that that's another thing that shocks people because it is a very Broadway caliber type show. So, and that's what's exciting. But that's my favorite number because it's not just because I sing it, but it's because it's a great song. And I really love that outfit on Mrs. Pete because I just think it's so beautiful and it's green and it's it just really the acting in it is really fun. And I think that people are getting that story. And
it's
I think
old school sexy.
Neat. Yeah.
How is it on stage, Josh? The original show had a full band, live band.
Yes.
And most, you know, performers, it was the band was there for a reason, you know, and it was, I think that that's the biggest change in the show for me artistically is not live music. How is it on stage? What do you prefer?
You know, for me, I always love live music and I think it's great because it does employ even more people. And I think that that's wonderful. But I mean, for the show and for the economy that when we opened, it was hard and it was tough because it was a big expense. But the good thing is that I'm glad they didn't just go and can it on a mic. They actually took the time to go into a studio, have each instrument mic'd, and have it done correctly. So the tracks that we use are impeccable. Like, they are every single instrument on a separate level. They can raise things, they can change things, and it feels like a live band as well.
Was that the band that was originally in the show recording that? Oh,
yeah.
So that is the band.
So it is the band. And they're still there with us, you know, and that's what kind of feels good.
They're all great players. I know, I think everybody who was in that first band. Yeah.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And it was all female, and that's what the whole show was kind of centered around. It's a female empowerment show.
And yet, when Mel B was in there, she was just, I mean,
she's a brick house.
Yeah, she is a brick house. I remember thinking, I'm never going to eat again. Her body is the sickest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean...
She was scary.
She was 6 miles...
Scary. You know?
She was... scary spice. I tell you what I want, literally what I want. She was amazing. And I think our dream team would have been her and Holly.
Yeah,
you
we actually said that to Holly as well.
Yeah, I remember, and we talked about this before, and I've talked to her about it in other forums, about her and Mel B being together. And it was a very tantalizing
It was something we all wanted.
That they had,
You know, it would have been fantastic, but just didn't work out, and Mel went on to do other things, and that's okay, and we're doing just fine, and it's great. You know, I mean, Chase is great. She's our peep diva now, and she really gets the audience involved, and she's such a talented singer. She's a backup singer for Wayne Brady when he was doing his show here. So, I mean, like, you know, our cast is really, really strong, and I think that's it makes me feel good, because it's like, you know, you want to be proud to be in a show, you know, and I really am proud to be in this show, and I've been here almost 2 years now, so it's kind of crazy.
So do you think that you're going to want to, you know, you have your songs coming out now. Do you think you're going to want to go out and go solo and do your own show here?
Of course. I mean, that's kind of always been a dream, is to headline your own thing and to do. But the thing is that, like, I may not be the face of Peep Show. Obviously, that Holly's the draw, but it's becoming.
You're the heart of Peep Show.
Well, thank you, Trish. You know, it's becoming more and more cool, because I feel like people are walking away with knowing Josh now.
Yeah.
It's not just the singer. You know, it's now they come to see Josh and
As
Holly.
As the women in all of the casino, they don't know Josh.
I'd love to see you do, like earlier in our studio, we have a piano in the studio, and usually the piano is just over there as a, I don't know, something.
A prop.
A large coaster. But you walk in here, and Josh is playing this piano earlier, and I could see you, like, do a cabaret show, a little bit of
I
something like
to.
That. Would be
and
really,
I wanna,
really cool.
I want to tap into, like, a lot of the old school Las Vegas, you know, of, like, the Rat Pack songs and Frank Sinatra, and that's what I think is so beautiful about
Wayne Newton,
yeah, just so the way that it was, like, back in the day. Like, I love those showrooms that have, you know, the booths that you can sit in, and just the way that it feels when you're in them is incredible, because history was made in those places. And I'd love to sing, you know, some of the greats, and just kind of do my own kind of review type show.
I'd love it. We'd be there.
Well, we've got to drop the curtain on this segment, Josh.
Thank you so much for having me.
Honestly, always a pleasure to see you.
Yes.
And we will do this again. We'll
part
have
two.
Yeah, part two. See how the trip to Carolina goes.
Yes, absolutely.
And the blackjack table, too. And I'll be at that next time.
Yes, you'll definitely have to join us.
I'll be able to be the MC to introduce Josh.
Exactly.
At third base. Playing Thank third base
well,
tonight.
I got to a point where I was like, if Josh sings for you, I need a $25 chip. Right? I was starting to be his manager.
Like a finder's fee.
Not that we didn't need it. We were hot. We were lucky.
We were.
All right, well, look for Josh in Peep Show and on Holly's World. Thanks again, Josh.
Thanks, guys.
Viva, viva Las Vegas. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair, so viva Las Vegas!
Welcome back. Our next guest played the role of Michael Novotny on the Showtime series Queer as Folk. He's a former host of Talk Soup and is featured on several VH1 Looking Back specials, the I Love the 70s, 80s programs, all those. He's a musician, the vocalist and lead guitarist for the rock band Zero One. He is also bringing his stand-up act back to the Las Vegas Hilton's Shimmer Cabaret, the famous Shimmer Cabaret, March 10th through March 13th. Welcome to our show, Hal Sparks.
Well, thank you. And those sound like a series of well-done facts.
Well, can I interrupt, though?
Can you correct me on the
dates?
Yes,
I'm going to correct you on the dates.
We're going to back up.
When am I there?
You are there.
Yeah.
You're basically there just about every weekend through May.
I'm the 23rd to the 27th.
23rd to the 27th.
Absolutely.
And then you're back in April the 13th through the 16th, 17th, 18th. You're there pretty much. You're like the resident guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to crowbar myself into being a regular in Vegas.
And can I just say, I have to interrupt because I'm the only female in a room of four men.
Yeah.
Well, five if we count. Our trusted
producer.
He's
not in the room. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I have
to say,
Hal, even hotter in person.
Oh, mercy. Well, thank you.
Yes, I'm going to throw the ladies, go see him at the Shimmer Cabaret. Who cares what he says? He looks good.
Wow, that's the spirit. And I was about to say, I was about to return the same thought to you, but actually what you say is valid as well. So you could skate on your looks, and I thank you for not doing that.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
Wow, I think we have a little love blossoming here, Katz. You can leave the room.
I think skating on your looks is how we've been working this show anyway.
Love Mike. Right.
All of a sudden, I'm moving my mic closer to Hal.
Yes, exactly.
The love mic.
Ow.
And as we've established, I have seen Hal Naked. I have to throw it out there because
Do tell.
Queer as Folk was a great, great show.
And groundbreaking.
And one of the reasons it was a great show, being a straight woman, I wasn't actually into it for any other reason than the Naked Men, which was mainly, let's just say, Hal was the best of the Naked Men.
Well, that's so true. But the
which part?
It is an awkward.
She is heterosexual.
Well, right on. I believe you. Although I will require proof at some point. I don't take anybody's word for it anymore.
It could be a long show, ladies and gentlemen.
It could be.
More like it could be a really quick show.
Yes.
Let's get out.
Exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, the theater of the mind. Ow. You're on my hair. Anyways. yeah, you know, it's fascinating. One of the odd parts of being on Queer as Folk was that anybody who comes up to you and goes, "I love the show, I'm a huge fan," has seen you nude. It's just a given. I kind of feel like I could come to AVN here and like look at porn stars and go, "I get you, man. I understand where you're coming
but
from."
But the fact that they're saying they love the show is meaning they love to see you naked, so that's a great compliment.
Well, I mean, there was more to it than that.
You can't dislike seeing you naked and still love the show.
That's true.
No, I don't think so. Because why would us women keep watching if it?
Yeah.
Again,
because we want to see unattractive naked men. Not happening.
Well, you know, you see enough of that in your real life. And I,
boy, you've done research on Dish.
Ouch.
But it's been 5 years since the show was on.
I mean, stalking, not research.
Okay, well, you can't do felony research, right?
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I call it little brother. You know what I mean? It's like big brother, but I just do it with my own stuff.
Everyone has a name for it, right?
Instead of satellites and spy planes, it's just me with a smartphone outside a window.
You and
little brother is watching.
You and little brother hanging out in the shrubs.
Right.
Well, I welcome it. There you go. Thank you.
It's been a while since Queer as Folk has been off the air, but yeah, you're still very closely affiliated with the show.
Interestingly enough, any more shows carry on beyond their years, unlike TV of old. And a lot of the show, you know, it's on Logo now. The DVDs still sell amazingly well. They are like almost a tool for coming out for people. So, you know, if someone...
So to speak.
Yeah. No, literally.
Not a euphemism.
Yeah. And a you know, a good deal of it, I think, I've always said that the benefits of Queer as Folk, the sociopolitical ramifications of the show, wouldn't actually come to bear until about 4 years after the show was off the air. Because the people who watched it would start, you know, ingraining what they felt and learned and grew from on the show into their natural life. And if you look at the progression of gay marriage, the elimination of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it's almost exactly on that timeline.
Right.
Yeah. That's true.
Right.
And ahead of your time.
You're one of the rare cast members on that show who was straight.
Well, it's about 50-50 at one point.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Gail Harold is straight, too,
yes,
I think.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And so is Scott Lowell. You know, everybody has their, you know, in the beginning, everybody was keeping their own, you know, sexuality to themselves to some degree. There was this idea that we shouldn't tell because it shouldn't be about that, whether we're straight or gay, playing straight or gay.
I do have to say I did research that while the show.
Oh, did you know? Were you pleasantly surprised?
Here we go.
I could get no information.
Oh. Well, I was very open about my heterosexuality during the show because I thought it was necessary to really stand out as an ally in the civil rights fight that is gay rights in modern America. There's a tool that the right wing specifically uses, which is the belief that all gay people, all people who would help gay people are also gay themselves secretly, or, you know, no one would help you but your ilk. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to be a straight ally and an openly straight ally and a secure straight ally where I'm as heterosexual as anyone ever need be. I'm completely comfortable with that part of it. I'm open about my relationships and or lack thereof in my own life because I want to make the case that gay isn't contagious, that it's not something you catch or learn or choose.
Right.
And it didn't change me. It's not going to change anybody else. And you can't arguably change gay people then if it, you know, it's AB logic. And so I really made that case. And some people thought I was being homophobic or distancing myself out of fear. But the reality was I wanted people to be who they could be. And I could only think of doing it by being who I am.
Right.
Well, I mean, your career has gone in so many different directions, and you were recently on Celebra Cadabra.
Right.
So do you put a little magic into your act now?
No, I don't do it in my stand-up. I'm a purist when it comes to stand-up. I really do believe in the one man, one mic kind of concept, or one woman, one mic, I suppose. I won't be sexist about it. There's some great female comedians. But the kind of concept of purity when you're doing stand-up. Nothing else. No props. Yeah. No nothing. No, you know, no deference to Carrot Top. But it's a different kind of act. Stand-up is you as a philosopher almost, and a funny philosopher. And so I sing in a band. I do magic and all this stuff. But those find their own houses. They have to. I'm doing a magic show. I think later on. I think it's going to be October. I don't know the exact dates yet, at the Magic Castle in LA.
Magic Castle is so much fun.
Legendary.
I
mm-hmm.
think we're going to need to go and check it out ourselves.
I agree.
We'll go with you.
Purposes.
Thanks,
yes.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting us.
I'll do the pull-off pants for you.
Ooh,
time, yeah.
Ow, in that right. case.
That saves right. me the trouble.
I'll be backstage. Thank you very much.
Look out.
A lot of comics, on your mm-hmm. your versatility, a lot of comics bring whatever they have into their act. I remember Steve Martin one time saying, no matter what you've done, you're going to bring it to the act, whether it's rope tricks or magic. But you sound like you're not of that school, huh?
No, I really come from the Carlin school or the old Richard Pryor, Godfrey Cambridge, the old late 60s, early 70s stand-ups where it has to be pure for it to still be stand-up. At a certain point, it becomes a one-man show or a one-man band or a mm-hmm. or a play or and so to me, it's very important that it keeps that singularity. But in all deference, Steve Martin is one of my big influences, and musical comics, I kind of get where they bring a singular instrument in because it's a tool mm-hmm. to get a point across. But for me, it's gotta be just that. And the nice thing is I have other outlets because I have a place to put my music.
You
I
have a
place,
band.
Yes.
Well, let's
right.
talk about your band. What's your band?
My band's called 01. We're a metal band. I have an album out. It's on iTunes, the debut album. The second album comes out this fall. It's called The Sacred Nothing. It's a melodic metal, Ozzy, Alice in Chains.
Oh, wow.
Kind of stuff.
The Sacred Nothing.
Yeah.
What's behind that title?
I really believe that, if you believe in the concept that nothing is sacred, then you have to believe in the concept that nothingness is sacred. And so, if you look at the point of meditation and all those things, it's those moments where everything in your life there's a vacuum created by life, be it death or breakup or love or all these moments that we have, these singular moments that shock us into the present, all seem to have an emptiness in the center of them. This kind of, you feel
That's
alone
true.
Or spotted. In the, and so that phrase kind of came, from, if everything, in stand-up, in my life, in stand-up, if nothing is sacred, using the old cliche, then in my music, the nothing part is sacred. The emptiness, those spaces,
right.
And you can't use that in stand-up. The great thing about doing music and acting in stand-up is that I have a place for all my emotions. Real rage doesn't work in stand-up.
Yeah.
Annoyance does. Annoyance can be very
Unless
funny.
Unless you're Sam Kinison.
But that was even artificial rage. That wasn't his mm-hmm. genuine rage. I'm talking about real emotions, and mm-hmm. if you can do a cartoon version of it, but even then, it's still annoyance. As hard as he sold it, Bobcat Goldthwait,
right?
Andrew Dice Clay,
yeah.
all those
guys. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Those that's a cartoon version of anger. Genuine anger would be just off-putting to an audience.
Yeah.
It does work in music, though. You can be totally enraged in music, mm-hmm. be it from bands like Nonpoint, where they're just or Slayer, mm-hmm. where there's a place for it.
Yeah.
In acting, you can just never guess what emotion you're gonna get to convey. It's in the script. So I don't get to walk in like I do in music. I can write a song about emotion I want to experience. Or if I'm writing a stand-up joke, I can write a bit about something that, I'm annoyed at. But when you're acting, they hand you the script and you have to bring that to life. You don't necessarily have the emotional choice. So each place I have some place to put all the creative.
If you could only do one, what would it be?
I would never do just one.
Wow. Well.
That's a question I get asked a lot, honestly. And I bristle at it only because America's the only country where you get asked that question. I don't know what it is. We're supposed to be the bootstrappers of the world, the people who believe that no matter what you do, you have the right to do it as good as you can do it, and if mm-hmm. you can make money doing it, you should be able to do it. So if you can sing, sing till you're a star and become a millionaire and all this. Whereas in, say, communist China, supposedly they assign you a job and you're stuck with it. Okay. Artists in China, singers or actors or whatever, they have to sing, act, dance, do stand-up, host, do television and film, or they're considered pitiable. They're considered not a real artist. He can only act. And the same thing in England. Dame Judi Dench is always my favorite example of this. She's in Bond films and Shakespeare.
Yeah.
She does sitcoms on television, commercials, and
Judi Dench does sitcoms?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd love to see that.
In England. And so, and it's accepted. Over here, if you try to break out of one thing, we get, there's a lot of bristling about that. Why don't you just pick?
So do you think it's hard to be successful at everything?
Mm, Well, I think a lot of people don't try.
Oh.
Well, I think the question is rooted in what is your real passion. Maybe that's the best way to you know, well, if you were to pick one way to entertain. That's because you're an introspective person. It's clear. And so, you know, when you have your one thing that you want to do to
convey
an emotion or
and I guess the one thing
entertainment
I want to do is promote some sort of emotional understanding. And that's at the root of all the arts that I do, either explaining to someone the annoying part of standing in line someplace and the value of standing in line versus, you know, a big mad rush for a counter. Like I have a bit about that, which I won't give away because people are going to come to see the show. But
Shimmer Cabaret, by the way.
Thank you.
March 23rd to 26th.
Thank you. Very well done. And a series of dates. You can look on the Hilton's website, I'm sure, or follow me on Twitter at Hal Sparks. Anyways, back to the story.
Back to the show.
Yeah. It's really what acting, stand-up music are all mechanics. They are artistic mechanics to convey emotion or convey, a philosophical point or an idea. They're a delivery system simply for getting that to wherever it needs to go. Most love songs are jingles for an emotion. They are as just most love songs on a rock radio station are just as much an ad for Coke. Or Pepsi, but just the product this time is love. Try love, mm-hmm. You might like it. Try love, I didn't like it. I tried this instead, and I preferred it. And the taste has love to hate. I chose hate. This is really what lyrics are about. They're really expressing, you know, that thing. So to me, I guess that's my job, and the other forms are less important to it. It just depends on how well they work for whatever particular audience.
Right.
I'm standing in front of
it. Let me ask how you assemble your act. Because I've heard some comics say that homosexuals are the last group you can make fun of safely, for example. They say, you know, that's one you can go after.
Really?
There have been comics who say that. Or just let's talk about focusing jerks. on any demographic out there. I mean, what do you think about that philosophy?
Well, the rule is, I believe, you can only joke up, meaning that you can only make fun of people who are better off in station than you are. That's why employees can make fun of the boss, but once the boss makes cruel jokes about the employees, he's a jerk. It's because he's in a position that they are not in. He can act on them against their will, and they have to take it. And anybody in a social rung below you is off limits. Mm-hmm. If you're, you know, in our society, women still make 70 cents on the dollar max to what a man makes. So to me, ridiculing a woman is off limits because she's already, just by stasis in her life, working harder than I am.
Mm-hmm. Minorities. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Minorities are in the same position, and gays also. I mean, they do not have the same freedoms you do.
Right.
So therefore, you don't have the right to make fun of them in that regard without looking like a jerk. You can say, I believe anybody can say anything they want, but you have to stand up to the judgment you're going to receive for what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. What about people like Don Rickles that just universally makes fun of everybody, but that's what he's known for?
Well, Don views himself as an old school Jew who is acted upon by the universe. He literally comes from a period of heightened anti-Semitism in the world that was virulent, violent, and beyond measure. So he comes from we're all in this together.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you never are offended by anything Don Rickles says, because he's universal. I mean, there's nothing that he could possibly say I would think that I would be
offended
by. Well,
he also looks like a frog, and you know you could take him in a fight. And there's an element of he's not above
mummy.
You. Right. If somebody who, you know, a big Adonis-looking guy made those same jokes, you'd want to take him out.
Yeah.
Because he already owns. He already is above you in station in life. He already has things given to him by his genetic makeup that you will not have. Tall people get more... raises and go higher up in companies than short people, and it has nothing to do with their those kind of things exist. So when Don Rickles, who looks like a lizard and views himself as as almost a Holocaust era Jew, and really takes that to heart, he does. You can tell because he's a sweet soul. He feels on equal footing with everybody else.
Yeah.
When you have somebody kind of big and thuggish like Andrew Dice Clay, when he says something similar, it doesn't hit the ears of the audience the same way because he's taller than you. He's thicker than you. He comes from a stronger place, and he has more advantages than you.
I agree with that. There was a comic recent that I saw that, took a lot of shots, and I felt myself being personally attacked. So I completely agree with
that. Yeah, well, I mean, the other thing, too, is, that kind of an act is a easy... you know, it's an easy thing to do because you'll get shock laughs and you'll get bigot laughs, which are you know, people often laugh
or homophobic laughs,
right? Or yeah, exactly. People will laugh at things. A lot of times, comedy is saying things people don't have the guts to say themselves. Mm-hmm. Their lowest rung impulses are often those things. Their own bigoted reflexes, their own racism, their own sexism, all those kind of things.
Clay's show, I got to say, I saw when I've seen Andrew Dice Clay a couple times fairly recently, and it was more like performance art than stand-up comedy, if that makes sense. It was like an exercise in surrealism in a lot of ways, where he was channeling this old version of himself in the here and now. You know, it was just, it was different than...
A caricature.
Yeah. Yeah, almost like a one-man show like you were talking about, with no real actual, you know, props or staging.
Well, a lot of times one-liners are like that. Guys who do one-liners for a living, there's a mechanic to their act that you don't have when you're just kind of a straight stand-up, where you're doing bits about, you know, concept-oriented bits. When you come, you know, I used to see Rodney Dangerfield walk, he'd come down to the Laugh Factory in his robe with no pants on.
We've heard more Rodney stories in robes lately. Yeah. Honestly, yes, God, both of us last year or so. Rodney in his robe. Yeah.
It seems like every comedy show we go to, someone's got a Rodney story in his robe.
He's always in his robe. Yeah. Shot through with holes.
And, yeah. He used to come down to, and he'd have a stack of blue index cards with jokes that he had bought written on them.
Oh, my
God. And then he would just stand on stage reading the joke, and if it worked, he would put it on the bottom of the stack, and he had like a red card in there to know when he was done. And if it didn't work, he'd drop it on the stage. And by the end of the show, there'd be about, you know, three quarters of them would be on a pile in the stage, just scattered all over. And he would just keep the ones that worked and walk right off stage. And if you were booked during the time he chose to walk in, settle in, you're not going to be on stage tonight. He's going to be up there for about 2 hours.
Different kind of card trick, huh?
Yeah.
I want to ask you how it was that you have become kind of a spokesman for all those retro shows on VH1. I love the 70s. I love the 80s.
It was very specific. Yeah. It was not an accident.
Why you?
Yeah. Because I would.
Good answer.
When they first started doing I Love the 80s, they didn't know what the show was quite going to be. They were going to interview people on red carpets. They were going to have the VH1 crew go out there. And their idea was that, we'll ask Brad Pitt about Care Bears at a thing and see if he says anything, and we'll just stitch together 10 hours of shows, one for every year, based on red carpet bumps and maybe some in-studio stuff, but that'll be mostly on the road and red carpet stuff. So they came out and started asking some comics to come in and do some fill-in stuff, just go in and I, at that point, I'd done Talk Soup, and I'd spent a year on Talk Soup, and I'd see people all the time who didn't know my name yet, and they'd go, "Hey, Talk Soup guy." And then I got on Queer as Folk, and people would call me Michael. And I went, at some point, branding has to kick in, and I got to start worrying about people knowing who I am. So I took the job simply because they were going to chiron my name under my face.
Every time
I'm on screen, Hal Sparks, Hal Sparks, Hal Sparks. And I sat in that chair for 8 hours. Everybody else did 20 minutes. And I sat in a chair for 8 hours talking about everything from Smurfs to One Day at a Time and the Rubik's Snake.
The question seems to be like that, like, "So Hal, tell us about the Rubik's Cube."
And that's what it was. Yeah. And then I would just riff. Everything you see on that show is improv. I don't prep at all. I don't watch old stuff to get ready. I don't do anything. If I remember it, I remember it. If I don't, I don't.
That's why it comes across so naturally.
I think it's
like you were the most entertaining part of this.
Easily, yeah.
Because I mean it. You know, I think anything you really mean shines through you a little bit more if you're genuine.
I did think the Rubik's Cube was pointless.
Yeah.
All right. All right, Hal. Well, we are at the end of our segment.
Well, it gives Dish and I time to run off into a side room.
Okay,
there's so many soundproof rooms around here.
There are now. For Trish McCrone, John Katzlamitis, catch Hal Sparks at Hilton's Shimmer Cabaret, the famous Shimmer Cabaret, March 23rd and 27th. Go to his website for more dates and more info about all of the great things he does. Thanks again for coming down
here. Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely.
Take care. Viva Las Vegas. Las Vegas!